Welcome, everyone. I think this is a topic of conversation that we shouldn't be shy to talk about. So I will introduce you to Tom. Now, I got to know Tom through a webinar that was actually put forward to me on toxic leadership. And when Tom spoke, I was astounded by his courage and his vulnerability. And I know in an industry that is quite full, it's very difficult to speak up and share about your experiences. So, Tom, do you want to share a bit about who you are and your experience in the maritime industry and what you're doing now?
Yeah, sure. Thanks so much for having me on. Top shot. So I spent 25 years in the Royal Navy at sea for probably 20 of those. So I've seen all sorts of leadership examples, good and bad, mainly good, I'm pleased to say. But through my time, I was in small ships, mine hunters, all the way through to the aircraft carriers. And because you switch every 18 months or so in the Royal Navy, you do get to an unusually high number of teams to plug into. So I worked for lots and lots of bosses. I had large teams underneath me as well. So I think, although it's all been very maritime, it's all right at the end when I got some jobs ashore, it's been quite a decent breadth and exposure to all sorts of different styles and types of leadership.
Fantastic. Thank you, Tom. Curious to know, before we dive in, atypically, what is the culture like in the Navy industry, the work culture?
It's naturally quite hierarchical by design throughout the centuries. There's always been a requirement for directness when required. It's very rank orientated. I think there's something like 9 ranks from the bottom to the top. Lots of studies have examined whether or not that's too many. That's where we're at. So hierarchical, quite formal. Again, it depends on the context. The whole of leadership depends on context, right? But the smaller ships tend to be less formal. Larger ships tend to be more formal. So it's hierarchical. It's very much in support of the captain. Captain's on a pedestal, not to be challenged. So you have to respect that when you're then in that position. But it's quite formal.
Okay. And do you see an abuse of power there with that hierarchical structure?
Like I said, I've seen all sorts. It's a magnifying glass. I would say that being in command of a warship, and I'm sure it's the same as a merchant ship or a super yacht or any kind of maritime environment, I'm sure there aren't that many differences. But you are on a pedestal and your flaws and strengths are all magnified. So if you have a tendency, a leadership tendency that's either very strong or unfortunate, it will get magnified. And of course, everybody zooms in on it. You've got nowhere else to do or nothing else to do. So flaws are magnified. And therefore, we tend to find, and because we like to discuss our leaders, you tend to get either some very good ones or quite bad ones. And it's quite rare to have an average captain of a ship. We seem to fall into one of two buckets.
Okay, great. Thanks, Tom. And what is your experience, personal experience of toxic leadership? What does that look like?
Yeah, so I had one particularly bad example in a frigate I was serving in where it was really untenable. The mannerisms, the characteristics of this particular captain were unsupportable and were causing members of the ship's company, officers in particular, to suffer beyond what you would normally describe as driving a ship hard. And there's a fine line between trying to get results in a warfighting unit and pushing too hard. And this one was consistently over the top. And I think in terms of the characteristics and what it looked like, the first one, I think, above everything else, was that this sense that no one else could do the job. This individual, absolute rock solid belief that they were the only ones who were competent. Everybody else was varying degrees of incompetent. And therefore, you constantly felt undervalued and disrespected. But ironically, the drive to perfection actually created all sorts of imperfections as people gradually became within themselves and got less and less confident, more and more on their tiny sliver of responsibility, and therefore less on the network of making this web work. So actually, the result of driving perfection in this rather aggressive way was to make things, in teamwork terms, steadily worse.
Okay, I'm sure it would have ruptured the psychological safety on board as well. It will have a ripple effect. Yeah.
It really did. It really did. And one or two people still haven't recovered to this day. That's how bad it is. And then you're hemmed in, of course, like in any ship. There's nowhere to go. There's no escape. So again, the magnifying effect makes it everything worse.
It's so sad. I was speaking to a client yesterday and she was working under a toxic leader and she feels incredibly lonely. As she said, she just felt like jumping off the vessel. She felt like there was no escape. And I know that there are many people out there that feel the same way.
I think that's right. I think that's the problem. And again, as I said at the top, particularly in the Royal Navy, perhaps because of the warfighting function, that there is a requirement to do as you're told. That is a prerequisite for a military hierarchy. Is from day one at college, Dartmouth, for example, that the leadership knows more than you do. And so you should really, one of the key tenets is obeying orders. Now, I think the Royal Navy gets that balance quite right compared to some navies. Some navies are very much head down and will not question anything. I think the Navy generally strikes a good balance. But that doesn't mean if you've got someone above you who's running, and particularly if they're at the top. And if you're a junior officer and you've got a mid-ranking officer who's giving you a hard time, there is recourse. It's one that sparingly, because you don't want to be seen to be telling tales. But if the person is at the top of a shop, the captain, then in order to go around that, you've got to go to your shore authorities. And that's something that you would do with real caution. And so it's a problem.
Catch 22. No. So in terms of managing a toxic leader, how did you cope with that? Because again, on board, you're living in confined environments and yeah, it's a living and working space. So it's a double whammy there. You can't escape.
Yeah, no, I tried all sorts of different things, mostly from the sort of day-to-day management. We were up in a very high threat area environment. I was doing 6 hours on watch and then 6 hours off, but I was also the operations officer. So I was responsible for the ship's planning. So I had to do that in one of my off watches. Sleep was at a premium, which of course magnified everything still further. And we were in this very high threat environment. We were shooting and being shot at on a sort of fairly regular basis. So that was lively to start with. So the first thing I had to do was manage the people around me as best as well as I could so that they were to try and mitigate the effects. To try and ensure to the best of my ability that they weren't being crushed by this same environment. I was very fortunate. My opposite number, the other sort of watch leader on the other side of it, he and I were very much in agreement about how this business should be done and that what we were seeing was not the answer. And so we never fell, neither of us fell into his trap. I think if we had been tempted to copy the boss, then the ripple effects might have been worse. So we spent a lot of time ensuring that wasn't the case and that we were protecting the people around us as best as we could. And then I went directly to him on four separate occasions to discuss this. And they all went increasingly badly. But the last one got a word out before the shouting and the screaming started. So at that point, what do you do? Now, we had no helplines. There was no sort of confidential reporting method. Absolutely none of the sort. You're just not expected to do that. But I knew that I had to go outside of the ship to get this reported. I knew we'd got to the point where something had to be done. And if that put my career at risk, then so be it.
And was that person dealt with effectively after you made those reports?
It took a while and we had to be very savvy. I assumed when I made the first call to a lawyer, a naval lawyer who I know, I assumed that was me done. That was my career over. I just assumed would get out there and that was me. But it took a while and for a long time. By a while, I suppose, from that first phone call to action being taken, probably about 2 months. And we got various visits. But initially, the system wasn't taking us seriously. In fact, they thought we were just whinging, that he was pushing us hard in the right way. And we couldn't get the system to acknowledge that it was actually being done in the wrong way. And putting us in harm's way, we were standing into danger. In my view, the bridge team, the officers on the bridge, were becoming so, their teamwork was being eroded to the extent where I thought we were standing into danger. And it was actually that finally triggered the system to take a closer look. And then when they did, and we were all interviewed under caution, as it were, then it happened very quickly. Once the flood barriers broke and complaints started coming in and someone ashore had a breakdown because of the treatment, et cetera, it all converged. And then he was dismissed, ship, removed from command. All happened very quickly. But those first few months were tricky because it felt like we were on the wrong side of the judgment.
Do you think the system has improved now? Have they taken that approach?
Yes, it has. It has. And I speak to various levels of actually all three services at the Staff College in Shrivenham. And there are now systems in place that make it easier for you to report these kind of things. Now, whether they're used or not, another business. Again, you cycle through your reports very quickly, and you don't want to be the person who starts attracting trouble to themselves. You don't want to be the person who looks a bit like a whistleblower. It's very old school and it's wrong, but it's the way it works. So yes, the systems are in place, and I think there's a culture shift happening. Have either taken effect to the required extent? I'm not sure. Of course, more importantly, perhaps, is the selection process and the education process to make sure that we don't put those people in charge in the first place.
Correct.
But any complex hierarchy is going to fall foul of that at some point. You can't have a system that's flawless, particularly when it's one that really wants strength at the top. It wants dynamism. It wants people who can take risks. So you've got this kind of, you're going to dynamo there. You want people to be punchy, and you're constantly selecting them on that basis. Recognizing when it slips over to the other side is hard.
Was his license removed? Do you know? Because I believe in our industry, they can get quickly reinstated in a very difficult.
So he was relieved of command, and then we don't really have a license in that respect. No. You're qualifying through the SDCW system, but in a reputation-based organization, that of course is that. You're not going back. You're certainly not back to sea. And I think that was probably a recommendation during the removal process, unfit for more sea time. But the idea of putting him back in would have been, I think, unthinkable. Then you've just got to work out at that point what you're going to do with the rest of your career. Are you going to stay? Not. In fact, in the end, he left after a couple of years. But no danger of him going back.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting because I'm very passionate about leadership, and I offer a 3-month leadership course. I'm also rooted in psychology and human behavior because I think that's critical. It's all about self-leadership in order for you to be able to lead others effectively. Do you think there's any learning gaps in that regard in terms of leadership training for seafarers?
Yes, I think there is. And the more I get involved in this, in the commercial sector, the more I realize there are holes in the ability for people to self-diagnose. And I think that's a fundamental part of this. I've spent many an hour with others talking about the situation I just described and trying to work out how much of what he was doing he knew he was doing. In other words, how in control of this capacity was he? And we've never fully resolved that. And I think that's definitely an area that needs to be looked at. Because it's all about education and correcting those sort of behaviors when they start emerging. And in the Navy, it's pretty clear when that happens. It's normally in your sort of early 30s and you're starting to get to the tops of various pyramids within ships. And at that point, it's savable because there's people above you who can stop it. But the defining characteristic of those that go on to high rank is generally a high degree of charm. So they're very effective at kissing up. They're normally pretty bright. But if you're a bully and you're not bright, then you're just a thug and you get weeded out by the system. But if you're charming and you're bright and you're delivering effect to the person above you, then it's very easy to overlook the manner in which that effect is being delivered, in my view. And that's a leadership requirement in its own right to identify this and then honestly report on it. And that was, in this case, those opportunities were ignored year after year by his reporting officers. They weren't honest with him. And therefore, so what chance did he have of being honest with himself? Well, he found it was a system endorsing this and rocketing him seemingly to the top. So yeah, self-education, self-awareness, absolutely fundamental. And I'm sure an area that every hierarchy could do better with.
And it's very difficult if you've got a narcissist in a leadership position because they always win. There's no two way about it. And they are very much egocentric. So can't negotiate. Yeah, bullying behavior, very typical of the narcissist. When did you realize it was time to act? Because a lot of people endure that toxic leadership behavior. And as you have identified it, it impacts people's mental health. I know from the clients that I see, there's, as you mentioned, there's a lot of fear around making that report because you can't guarantee whether it's going to be confidential. Normally, if it is the captain, then they go straight to the captain and said they've been reported. And so working in a very isolated industry with no HR department on board or anything like that, then the captain is the one who is addressing it. So then it really aggravates the problem. But when do you think it's time to take action or even leave, resign?
For us, it was, in my case, it was relatively straightforward. It was someone ashore having a breakdown, which I got with. We were still at sea in the Persian Gulf. There was a breakdown ashore, and then one of the officers in my department, so I was head of the warfare department, officer, and one of those came to me saying, I want to make a complaint. Now, he and I had discussed this many times, for months, in fact, and we had the options of how to do this and how the relative pros and cons of taking that action. But eventually he came to me and said, okay, I've had enough. I know one of my colleagues ashore is in difficulty. It feels like I'm heading the same way, which I agreed with. Something has to be done. And it was at that moment I thought, okay, so my personal attempts to address this had failed, as had everybody else's. Not too many people tried, I have to say, because, you know, it's such a pleasant thing to do. But my personal attempts at redress had failed. People were now falling over. So time to do something, time to act. But there was no system in place. There was no, even our email system couldn't be guaranteed to be secure. So even just getting that message off the ship was a challenge. Something has to be done at that point.
Yeah. Wow. Tom, thank you so much for your time and sharing your insight and experience with us. Very grateful. And I can't wait to have you in my membership to serve the fellow seafarers and for us to unpack this in a safe space, because there's a lot of learning, as you said, it starts with education and then we can make a change. So thank you so much for your time, Tom. Lovely to have you.
Thank you.